I ordered the software, learned how to use the software, and started writing. 6 months later, the screenplay is finished. I sent it to the producer a week ago this last Friday. Tuesday of this last week, he called me. He received the screenplay, which was rather large at 136 pages, as screenplays go, but it had to be done. I tried to trim it. But by the time I got done with the action and the chases and the description of all the action and everything, it was 136 pages, and there was no trimming it. So I bound it. I shipped it. He read it. The first thing he did when I answered the phone, he said, "Brooks." I said, "Yeah." He said, "This is Harvey." I said, "Oh, wow. Hey, how's it going?" He said, "I read your screenplay. Congratulations. You just wrote a major motion picture." Well, this is no ordinary picture, my friends. This is a picture about the coming awakening, the coming changes of 2012. Now, there are a lot of movies out there, a lot of screenplays out there trying to do it. But none of those screenplay writers have 2,000 pages, copyrighted published pages, about the end times, with 20 years of research behind them. So it put me in a very unique position to put factual evidence into the screenplay. I had evidence from the Maya, from Sanskrit, from the Zohar, from the Sefer Yetzirah, from the Egyptians, and tons of modern physics. Well, now, it wasn't going to be a documentary, so we're not talking about History Channel or Discovery Channel or anything like that. What we're talking about is a major motion picture with action, with stars in it, people, you know, being chased and doing chasing and antagonists, and just like you would have in any major motion picture. So by the time it was all said and done, we had a real product here. So recently, like a couple of days ago, I found out that it's time to put a contract in place, to put options in place, and we are now moving forward with trying to find a star and a director. Shouldn't be hard to do, because as I was writing the screenplay, I actually had the movie running in my head. So now we have rememberingthefuturebook.com, and this week I will be launching rememberingthefuturemovie.com. Now, is that the name of the movie? No. It isn't. I'm not going to tell you the name of the movie, because that's the way it's done in Hollywood. Until you have a deal, till it's really being shot and in the can, you don't tell the name of the movie. You don't tell what's going on, because it's like the oil business. Everybody's looking over your shoulder and everybody wants to know what you're doing. So that's all I'm going to say about that, a la Forrest Gump. I'm just telling you that now you have a real reason to buy the book, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul, and Time Travel, because now it is going to be part of a major motion picture. You want to know what it's about? Buy the book. I promise you. If you don't get something out of it, I would be happy to discuss it with you. But for $14.95, I don't think you have a lot of risk there. Slightly more than a movie ticket. So if you want to talk about that, I'd be happy to talk about it. Tons and tons of readers out there that have read it. Some have written. Most of you have not. If you have any questions, any comments, if you read the book, I'd be happy to field those. All lines are open tonight. And anyone who wants to call in, we'll talk about any subject you want to talk about tonight. I would appreciate it, because I am on the road driving, I promise, under the speed of sound, and I'm headed back for southern Mississippi for another week, working a contract on my day job. This is my night job, and it is like a vacation. It is wonderful, because we enjoy being here. We enjoy talking to you. I enjoy talking to you. All my multiple personalities enjoy talking to you. I'm kidding. I say we because it's just good training for me. We're all in this together. As we move forward with our week and with this incredible year. When we started 2011, we thought this is really going to be the year that changes history. This is going to be the year when investors come forward, when money starts moving again, banks start loaning again, small businesses really going to take off. You're going to see jobs created. You're going to see America come back. Well, it's May, the month of May, and we're not seeing it. The stock market is sliding a little bit. Oil prices are sliding. Oil is climbing. And we're not moving any closer to world peace than we were last year. In fact, we might have slipped a little bit. What really gets us as a nation is when we don't know which direction the boat is going. If we have a pretty clear idea, we poke up over the bow and we see what we're headed for, we could put our head back down and grab the handle of the oar, and we could pull hard. We can start a new business. We can work overtime. We can really pull together as a nation. But when we look over the bow and we can't tell where we're going, we look up at the crow's nest and there's nobody there, and the captain is on vacation every 6 weeks, here, there, everywhere, and we can't figure out whether it's him or his wife that's running things, we get a little nervous as a nation. We start hunkering down. We start maybe not giving everything that we have to the effort. We start taking care of number one. And when we do that, when we stop pulling together, the whole boat begins to slow down. It loses momentum. It loses direction. And that's what we're seeing. That's why the unemployment numbers are going back up. That's why personal savings are going down. That's why banks, I don't even want to talk about banks because it gives me a rash, but they're not loaning money. Even though they've made record profits, even though they're hiring people right and left to handle the foreclosures. That's right. Thousands and thousands and thousands of foreclosures every single month. It sounds like a deal, but these are people that are losing their homes. And if people are losing their homes, their credit is going out the window. And if their credit goes out the window, they can't borrow money. They can't borrow money. They can't buy cars. They can't buy furniture because they don't earn the money to pay cash. And if that happens, then the auto industry suffers, the furniture store suffers, the clothing stores suffer. All of the trades suffer because those people are not earning enough money to enter the credit market on a fair and level playing field. The banks, they don't care because they're going to sell all the homes off. They don't care if they get a nickel on the dollar because you, the taxpayer, are going to make up the difference. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're going to make up the difference. And there's nothing you can do about it. And that's not the politics of it. That's the political science of it. This is a scientific talk radio program, and so we can talk about the science of it. So what do we do? How do we connect with this planet? How do we connect with the abundance of energy and wealth that there is in this universe to be able to move this forward? I'm going to tell you that. The instant that we realize that we are in charge, that we are 100% responsible for our life condition, oh, it's going to hurt at first. Because, hey, you don't have anybody to blame anything on. There's no more excuses. You know, one excuse is as good as another. Just throw all those out the window, people, because you are where you are because of you, because of the choices that you made. Now, you might think that things are out of your control. You might think that some of your life is destiny or that somebody else is in control or that things just seem to trickle down to your position and they always work out that way. But that isn't true. The mathematical fact is that you have set up a resonance in the universe that is creating the life condition that you have. What you need to do is set up another resonance at a completely different frequency so that the abundance you dream about will be yours. Now, you can't dream about one thing and work for another. That's what most people do. They holler, "Lord, Lord, let me win the lottery," but they never buy a ticket. You see what I'm saying? So we've got to change inside, and then we have to change direction. We have to change our diet. We have to change our job. We have to change the magazines we read, the movies we watch. We have to start thinking about formulating a dream, that is to say, an objective for the future. Now, why do we have to do that? Well, that's very important. And it's very important what that objective looks like. Because if that objective looks like an object, looks like a thing, like I want a big house, or I want a fancy car, or I want $1 million, or I want something, what's going to happen is that's what's going to resonate with the universe, if it can. For instance, if you're resonating with the universe that you need $1 million, you want $1 million, that might not be. In fact, there's a very slim chance that the universe is going to resonate with that. However, if you were to think about what you could do with $1 million, then the thing that you wanted to do might resonate with the universe, and it might not take $1 million to get it. In fact, someday somebody's going to, how did you do that? How did you get that without $1 million? I don't know. I just wanted it. I dreamt about it. I thought about it. I listened to where I needed to be and what I needed to do, who I needed to listen to, who I needed to call, what job I needed to take, and I got it. Well, that's how it works. Now, the other thing is, that we want to make sure that these dreams and objectives are not things. They're not physical. They're not like that car or the house or the money. They're process instead. So when we think about the three states of humanity, three states of mortal existence, being, doing, and having, I know you've read that before. You've read it in other people's literature before. But I'm going to explain it to you from a little different standpoint here. Being something, like what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah, you ask people, most people, that they don't know the answer to that. Even if they're little kids, even if they're middle-aged kids, even if they're grown-up kids like me, you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, my goodness. Most people say, I don't know. I don't know. Well, it's important to know. It is important to know. You want to be a doctor, an engineer, an architect? Do you want to be an artist, a musician, a bricklayer? You want to be a mechanic? You want to be a talk radio host? That's a good objective because it's a process. It is a process of being something. You are something, or you're going to be something. You're moving toward it. The other thing is the doing. Because this is where the rubber meets the road, people. A lot of people want to be something, but they don't do anything about it. I want to be a doctor. Okay, fine. But you can't just go out and get a bunch of play school instruments and a smock in the uniform section of Walmart and call yourself a doctor. No, no. There's education you have to get. There's training you have to get. There are tests you must pass. Can you be? Of course you can be a doctor. No, some of the doctors I know, hey, anybody could be a doctor. I know some engineers that would make great doctors. I know some mechanics that would make great surgeons. But they haven't done what it takes to be a doctor. Excuse me while I take a drink of Pepsi. Hold on. Thank you. Oh, yeah. Pepsi is definitely better tasting than Coke. So, by the way, if you want to talk about that, you can call in any of the phone lines at pbsradio.com. The numbers are listed at xsquaredradio.com if you're listening live. It is Mother's Day, and we are in great gratitude for the mothers that have brought our mortal bodies into the world. We are in gratitude for the mothers with whom we are sharing the act of creating life in our own image. And we are in gratitude for Mother Earth that allows us to breathe her air and drink her water and eat of the fruit of what she does with sunlight before our very eyes. And we are expressing our gratitude by doing our best in keeping the air clean, keeping the water clean, and picking up after ourselves. For those of you that have never been out of the United States, I can give you an idea of what, for instance, Cairo, Egypt is like. You go to Cairo, it's a city of 20 million people. Besides not having a single stoplight or signal, I don't know how they do the traffic. But the canals going outside of Cairo are choked with trash. And I don't mean a few paper cups. Mountains of plastic bottles, tires, garbage. And this is where people get the drinking water. So be grateful. Be grateful for Mother Earth and keep these things clean. We do have a caller. Joe from Idaho, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you today?
I am doing wonderful, sir. So good to hear your voice.
Well, I don't know. I thought about being a radio show host, as you put it. I've talked to him a little bit at BBS. I think I would want to call it Life According to Joe Schmo, or A Thousand Ways Things Won't Work, or Solutions, or something like that. Considering the things that you have said both today and last week it was some about energy and about different things from the Soviet Union or whatever. Well, I was married in Odessa, Ukraine on the 26th of April, 10 years ago, which was the 15th anniversary of the Chernobyl blow-up. And I happened to be listening to Dr. True Ott as he was talking to a Lyndon LaRouche representative, and they were saying, we need to open up the North Slope, and we need to have more nuclear power plants. And I hear Dr. Deagle saying, we can have nuclear power plants, we just have to do it differently. Well, you know, if people wanted to get on YouTube and look at magnet motors, or zero-point energy, or Perendev motor, or there's a few of those. If you just keep looking through those things, you'll find that there is free energy, and that we have had this technology for a long time. We don't need nuclear energy at all. We don't need any drilling for anything that would get these oil guys more power. The reason they shut down Nikola Tesla is because they couldn't put a meter on his desire to give people free electricity all over the world. Which brings to my mind the concept, what you were saying, and I asked a young person this just a few weeks ago, what do you want to, you know, figure out what you want to do? And she's going, I don't know what I want to do. It's just like you were saying, well, if we think in a different mode, you're talking about $1 million, wanting to do get $1 million. I'd like to give $1 million. I'd like to give knowledge. I'd like to give ideas. I don't know whether I want to get. I'd like to give. So what I kind of think is that if I had the chance and there wasn't a state who said, you don't have a right to be a father, we're going to take your children from me, and I could put them on my back and treat them as a papoose, by the time they were six or seven or something, they would already know how to do the cooking, the cleaning, the growing the food, the hammering stuff on an anvil, welding. That there would be a number of things they would be exposed to, so that by the time that they were, oh, 7, 8, 9 years old, you could start asking them, well, what do you want to do? Or they would be telling you they wanted. But I want to build machines. I build generators. I want to learn about animals. And at that point, turn them over to a master to let them experience that and what it all consists of. And maybe they don't have to come down to just a doctor or an ass or a builder of generators or anything else. You have a weapon such as yourself. Everything from a oil driller to a screenplay writer. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I do.
When we equate all of this as, let me see, you go chase our money and we'll take your children over here in the indoctrination center and we'll take your, and we'll poison them mind and body, and we'll take your elders and we'll treat them as old folks at the old folks' home and manage their illnesses to death from the drug pushers' drugs on the 6 o'clock news that we caused. And you can pay us for permission to get married, and you can pay us for permission to transport yourself, and you can pay us for permission to cut down your logs and build your own house, and then you can pay us tax for that, and then you can pay us for permission to build a tank to poop on, and it goes on and on and on. So I would like some input to this. When it's one alone, there is powers to be. We keep hearing and considering this collective consciousness. And you're saying that we just keep going along, and when things seem like they're not going right, we hunker down. Well, there have been people in human history who just stood up and says, I declare my independence, and I sign my name to it. And if they want to, they can shoot me dead, but I'm independent. Enough is enough is enough. When it's one person that does that, they're a target. They take their children, they take their home, they take everything they do, and they throw them in a cage or kill them dead. If there is truly a collective consciousness and awakening, why are we going along with this pay the parasites? Take your pick, the bankers, the insurance companies, all these people who produce absolutely nothing and say, you go chase our money. I think that we're chasing the wrong thing. Kind of. So I guess
I see your point that the collective consciousness or the collective conscience is really the average reality that's a result of all the sentient beings in this universe, in this, especially this local universe. Now, when I look at the way that the community works, what you're talking about, you know, health department permits for septic tanks. You're talking about property taxes for real property. You're talking about a marriage license, and you're talking about a driver's license and a license for your vehicle and a Department of Motor Vehicle serial numbers and all of that.
And now climbing a boat and pay us for permission. So,
yeah, but you have to think about what the alternative would be. I've seen what the alternative is. What happens when there is no guidance about how or where you put a septic tank in. I've seen it. Even in East Tennessee, you have old septic systems that are grandfathered in where the sewage is just run into a sinkhole or run
almost
into a
like
cave.
Nuclear power plant.
It isn't processed correctly.
Yeah, I understand.
And you end
that.
Up with terrible pollution. So,
yeah.
You know, smart people have to look at this and have to say, how can we best manage the resources that we have, and who's going to come up with the money for that management? Well, I was just driving in Western Florida today, and I paid four tolls on a road that I was driving on. I like toll roads because the people that drive that road pay for that road, and the people that don't drive on it don't pay for it. I think that most of the roads in the country should be toll roads. Right now we're facing legislation that President Obama is about to put into place because electric vehicles are getting ready to start hitting the highways in pretty good numbers, And as you know, they don't buy fuel, so they don't pay fuel tax. So the money that the states and the federal government would get off of that vehicle isn't coming in. And the states are already hurting because people are driving less miles, or they're driving high mileage or higher mileage vehicles, not high mileage vehicles, but higher mileage vehicles. And so thus they're buying less fuel. The fact that they're buying less fuel results in less fuel taxes. And so the states are really hurting, and several of the states are either going to charge a one-time fee on the purchase of an electric vehicle, or every time you re-up your tags, they're going to take your odometer reading, and they're going to make you pay for the mileage that you drove. Now, the logic behind this is that the electric vehicle does just as much damage to the highway as any other vehicle. That's absolutely false. Because electric vehicles are lighter, and electric vehicles don't usually drive on the freeways. They drive on the secondary roads, or they drive on the inside of the city. They don't typically get out on the freeway and drive 500 or 600 miles at a time. So it is a completely different wear and tear on the road. They're almost harmless to the road. They have about the same wheel-to-weight ratio as a motorcycle. So
yeah,
there's almost no damage to the road whatsoever.
There's a guy, and I don't have it right off the top of my head, who's put one of these magnet motors in a little Geo with an automatic transmission. He shows the whole thing on YouTube. You can check it out. But the point I'm asking, and maybe you can answer this, do you think we'd have those problems if children started out on our backs and by our sides instead of in front of the Disney Parasite Corporation? And in the school is saying, you go chase money and socialization is coming here to learn all the bad habits of the other kids. Or do you think that if we raised them and we were neighbors going, look, you don't poop in my crick. This is an old thing. This really old thing. You go back to old timers in Idaho, the guy upstream, you don't poop in my crick is basically the way it goes. And if we paid attention to each other and each other's needs, and we were our brother's keepers and we kept our children with us, do you think there'd be drunken teenagers out there on the lake to kill somebody so we'd have to have cars, we'd have to pay for permission to have a license on a boat so we can go stick our canoe in the creek?
We also wouldn't have the technology that we have. My grandmother was a brilliant woman, and she went to school in a one-room schoolhouse. And by the time she was through with the eighth grade, she knew all the grades by heart because she'd been through them 8 times. She's the one that taught me to read. She's the one that inspired me.
I think
the quality of the school does make a huge difference.
Well, kind of still think that schooling should be at home, and I have to ask why again. If society hadn't been shaped or wasn't shaped the way it is, would there be a J.P. Morgan that the Rothschild bankers own 2/3 of his holdings who would say to Nikola Tesla, no, we're going to destroy your laboratory because we can't put a meter on it? If Nikola Tesla was set free to be his own free self, do you think that maybe 50 years ago we wouldn't need highways, we'd all be building our own flying machines? And do you think that if we had our freedom and knowledge was free, it wasn't some proprietorially owned thing in a high department of education, do you think that we would be able to advance as a free people more than one who is actually born into bondage?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't. I can tell you that there are nations out there who think that knowledge is free, and they take advantage of the thinker all the time.
Well, I don't know what to. All I know is that I've come to a point where I've got to tell them enough is enough. I don't want their poisons in the poison center. I mean, their grocery stores. You know, pick your favorite tasting toxic food. I don't want their vaccines. I don't want them to tell me I have to chase money. I really believe in freedom. It's not a hollow word to me. I see You guys talked last week a little bit about this ex-Soviet Union and living over there quite a bit and driving and getting married and having children and rebuilding a Soviet apartment. I know somewhat about it. And over there where there's a bare piece of land, the people just grow their gardens there. They just grow their garden and what they don't actually need to feed themselves, because the bankers, these same bankers, already dismantled their country like they're doing to ours. They take their vegetables and they go down on the street and sit on a box and they sell them along with their underwear, their hardware, their cottage cheese, their milk, their whatever they have to sell. The police are starving a little bit, so they'll come and take a little bit of what goes on. And I thought this was corruption at first, but they protect them from the tax collectors and the mafia and the thugs on the street. And there's no pesticides, and genetically modified foods are illegal. And so the people have a free, under-the-table economy. And I really found that as a foreigner, I had more freedom in the ex-Soviet Union than in my own homeland, where I was born and raised and where my great-grandfather built the first road into the first Idaho capital of Albion before there was a state of Idaho corporation. I almost have to say that enough is enough. I want to declare my independence. You have no right nor no room to tell me how I must live. I have a good brain. I can figure out solutions. I can connect with people who also have solutions. And we can make a better world without your large standing armies, your rules, your regulations, your toxic crap, and this so-called norm of everybody go chase money and pay us with it while we take care of everything you need. And so I guess I would like your input and anybody else's on this, because that seems to be the solution to me, is to come to a collective consciousness where we say enough is enough to the bankers, the warriors, the cops call themselves heroes, pointing the biggest guns at our heads and on a chain of lies that they call law to me. So anyways, I'll get off the phone, and I appreciate you very much. I listen all I can, and I would like input from other people too, whether I'm just off in Never Never Land, idealistic or whatever. I appreciate your input, and thank you much for your time.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge.
And we're back. Sorry about that. Stories from the Road, X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. I'm coming up on Tallahassee, Florida. I am doing under the speed of sound, but as we go from cell to cell, sometimes the call drops. I don't know if we still have Joe from Idaho on the line. Joe, are you still there?
He left.
Okay. Sorry about that. That's just the way it goes. But what I was going to say is that schools are very important, and the quality of the school is very important. And I know that we do have a problem with our government schools in the sense that we have a tendency to let the unions run our schools. And that can be a real problem, especially in some areas where the quality of the teacher is not good. The system does not allow us to get rid of those teachers that have stopped being good teachers, if they ever were good teachers, and have not allowed the good teachers to excel in that system. That is a counterproductive system. The school boards are going to have to work on that. They're just going to have to face these unions down and make sure that we have a quality product in our classrooms, because I know some great teachers. I know Jeffrey Ware up in Odessa, Washington, small little town. He was the number one teacher of the year in the state of Washington. Absolutely brilliant science teacher. Every kid that is in his class is going to talk about his class for the rest of their lives. If you're inspired by a good teacher, if you're in a great teacher program, there's nothing like it. If you're in a bad one, then maybe it's better to just stay home and be homeschooled. I also know a lot of people that homeschool, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for those parents that are willing to take that time and that effort to teach their children. And homeschooled children consistently do better than government school children on national tests, the same tests that the kids in school have to take. But the social balancing of that child, actual long-range, long-term success of a homeschooled child compared to a kid that's come out of a good high school program or a good elementary school program, it's really hard to tell. Really hard to tell. That self-starting, self-motivating spirit that really produces the A student in a school system, it shows up in college. It shows up in the professions. I can tell you that from experience. So in some respects, I agree with you, Joe, but, you know, we don't live in the same age that we did with the country home where a kid could stay pretty well close to the small town and have a good quality of life. We live in an age where technology is doubling every 2 years, in some areas even faster than that. And we have the world's greatest library, bigger, faster, and more efficient than the Library of Alexandria ever thought about being. And our kids are immersed in it, and they can learn at their own pace. And a lot of these kids can learn very, very quickly. And if that's the case, we're going to produce a brilliant, brilliant human race. That means that all that Tesla had to offer, multiply it times 10 million, and that's what's coming forward. That's what we're about to see. The Internet's only been out there for about 15, 16 years. You're going to see huge benefits from that in less than 10 years. Do you have any thoughts on that? No. Okay. Well, I guess we lost Joe, but that's okay. I really cherish his point of view. I'm grateful for it. It lets us know that we do have a problem. Nuclear power plants sound great on the surface, and that's because General Electric has built all of them for the last 20 years. You can see the price that Japan is paying right now for those designs. The problems we're having with the Fukushima plant right now is because the auxiliary generators that would have run the pumps to keep the reactor cool and prevent the high temperatures that we saw and thus the explosions, those generators. Okay. Okay, I'm on by myself. That's cool. So General Electric, in their great design, put the generators in the basement. In the basement. And so when the tsunami hit, the basement filled up with water. And guess what? The generators couldn't run. If the generators couldn't run, you couldn't run the pumps. If you couldn't run the pumps, you couldn't keep the reactor cool. Hello? Not very smart engineering. Not very smart engineering. And they're paying the price. The dead zone in Japan is paying the price. And we might think that nuclear reactors are clean, and in some respects they are. San Onofre has been around for a long, long time, since the early 60s. I toured that plant in 1965, and it was online, and it was running then, and there have been other plants built. But in the United States, we have not brought very many nuclear power plants online. So General Electric has had to build them in other countries, and that's exactly what they have done. Now, in Europe, they have found alternatives to nuclear power. They're using a couple of companies in Europe have been very, very successful with biogas. What is biogas? Oh, I'm glad that you asked. They use cow manure to stabilize a methane-producing slurry. They gather the methane, compress it, and run a generator with it, and they produce electricity. When they're finished, they produce a very high-quality, low-odor, chelated fertilizer that can be put right back on the farmland. Now, it's not all cow power. There are other sorts of waste that go in there that produce methane, but certainly cow manure stabilizes that biogas process. And several biogas companies are now out there, and it is so successful, they're calling it cow power. And it is so successful that they have actually shut down an entire nuclear power plant, totally replaced it by using the natural methane generated from the waste of their animals and other waste products to generate their own electricity and produce natural fertilizers, non-chemical-based fertilizers. So it's a great plan. I wish we could get after it here in this country, but there just have not been that very many new plants coming online. So our first hour is done. I'm going to get a little bit more into the earth and our resonance with it. But as you realize right now, the sun is down. You can see six planets aligned in the sky tonight. Those of you that are in an area where the moon isn't so bright or no clouds, with binoculars, you can even see Uranus and Neptune up there. Four planets are certainly visible. It's kind of a rare sight. You might want to go out tonight. Look for Mars. It's the red-colored one. And then you'll be able to see Saturn, Venus, and Jupiter all lined up there. And now with binoculars or us. So we will go ahead and take a break right now. Get something to drink, about 4.5 minutes. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew.
The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared.
Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Still in the 530 kilometers per second range. Earth is being buffeted by a powerful solar wind. And that solar wind is producing an aurora in the northern hemisphere. It's also having its effect elsewhere on the planet. We are beginning to see cosmic rays build up in the upper atmosphere. Now, these can actually reverse global warming. There is no doubt, no question whatsoever, that the planet has been warming in years past. Evidence indicates that the average temperature of the Earth leveled out around 1998, about 13 years ago. However, the extremes of the weather, the colds of the winter, the heats of the summer, are greater than they have ever been on a consistent basis. Yes, there have been records. Yes, there have been records broken. Yes, there have been records matched. But consistently, we are seeing hotter summers and colder winters. And no, the Earth has not changed its tilt relative to the sun. That energy is coming from somewhere. It's not only coming from the heliosphere, that is the bubble around our solar system that's generated by the sun. It's also coming from a galactic wind, a galactic pocket of energy, high energy particles that are magnetically collected and kept in one place. And right now the heliosphere is going through it, and the Earth is being exposed to those frequencies. The ancients had an idea that this was going to happen. How did they know? That's a really good question. But the Maya knew that around this time, the year 2012 by our calendar, we would be exposed to a band of very intense gravitational and high-frequency radiation frequencies from the galactic plane. Now, they had an idea that this was going to be the end of an age, the end of the age of Pisces, the beginning of the age of Aquarius. What does that mean? I mean, a lot of people have talked about that, and they throw it out there like you should already know the answer to it. But the reality is, this is a path, a circular path that's drawn in the heavens of various constellations, zodiacs we call them, a zodiacal calendar, 12 signs of the zodiac. But instead of 12 months, we're talking about 12 periods of approximately 2,300 years. Anyway, when you add it all up, it comes out to about 26,500 years for what's called a precession. This is the circle that's drawn in the heavens, from our point of view, of course, by a pencil, as it were, sticking through the Earth from south to north. So the North Pole is kind of drawing a circle in the heavens. We're coming to the end of the constellation Pisces, and we're beginning to chart the path through the constellation Aquarius. Right now, Polaris is our North Star. But in the last age, Draconis was the North Star. And the North Star will change yet again as we proceed forward. Now, most of us are going to be gone by then, at least from this mortal life. What really causes one to wonder is the Maya, living in somewhere around the 5th century, had this idea handed down to them by a king whose name was Pakal. Now, Pakal was, for all intents and purposes, a local giant. Yes, he was famous, of course, but I mean he was a giant. He was tall, 7 or 8 feet tall, which is very, very large for an Indian culture like the Maya. He also had 6 fingers and 6 toes, as did his son. Now, when you look at the depictions of Pakal teaching those around him, you can see an obvious difference in height. Now, we see this also in the Babylonian scrolls. We see this in the Akkadian writings and hieroglyphs that we see. We see it in Egyptian. Does it symbolically mean that the king was just a big guy and everybody else was ordinary? Yes, it could mean that. But to see it culturally, from culture to culture to culture, and to see the anatomical differences in skull shape, in numbers of fingers and numbers of toes, one has to draw an anthropological conclusion. And that is that these individuals were of a different race. They had a different genetic makeup. They had special knowledge that they brought with them or that they were taught, and they were trying to disseminate it to the people. In doing so, they put it in their architecture. They put it in their religious writings. They put it in structures and edifices and artwork that was covered the land from the Nazca lines all the way to Pakal's own tomb lid, which was discovered in the early 1950s, and which José Argüelles, as a young man, was exposed to just after it was discovered. He is the man to first put the idea out there in modern literature that 2012, December 21st, 2012, was actually the end of the age, and that something grand or terrible or both was going to happen on that day. José Argüelles is the original author that got all of this started. And if you want to listen to his interview, you can go back to the 2008 archives and you can listen to José Argüelles right here on X Squared Radio as he explained that ancient tomb lid. We also have in the Ark of Millions of Years series, the 1,500 pages in the first 3 volumes, and we just sent the 4th volume to the printer. The proof of now has now been approved, and it is going to be coming out in print next month. So you'll be able to add that to your collection. In those books and in that history, what we have learned and what we have verified and validated is that the Maya had special knowledge that Earth, at least part of it, had come through some kind of a wormhole, some kind of a time shift from another place in a galaxy or even another galaxy to this point in this solar system. Well, what happened to the planet that was already here? The 2 planets merged. They merged even though they were different vibrational matters. One was a higher vibrational matter, which in the scriptures they call it spirit matter, and the other was a lower vibrational matter. In the scriptures they call it temporal matter, and the two now occupy the same space in space, the same place in space. It's not too far of a stretch. When you think about the human body itself, we are, after all, a spirit occupying temporal matter. You are just like me. You've eaten just as many Klondike bars as I have. Okay. I've eaten a few more Klondike bars than you have. But I sit down with my kids, and I ate exactly the same meal as them, except I grew older, I aged and they didn't. They will eventually. I'll have my revenge. I'm kidding. The point is that the molecular biology is shifting because the DNA is programmed to age. But the actual physical edifice is identical. It's just animated with the spirit inside. Same with the earth. The earth is a living being of sorts. It has spirit matter on the inside of it, and it has temporal matter on the outside of it. It is an animated body moving through space. This is what the Maya believed. This is what they taught. This is what they centered their culture around. And the artwork, the architecture, the science that they left for a society that would live 1,500 years in the future is now laying before our eyes. Big question people ask is, why? Why did they do it? Well, those of you that have been listening to this program for a while already know the answer to that. If you're new to the program, I'll tell you. It's because quite possibly we were the ones that built it. Or at least some of us alive today were involved in the building of those edifices. We left that information for ourselves. So then we got to this area, we got to this space, we got to this neighborhood in our galaxy. We would remember why we were here, what happens when we get here. And perhaps, maybe, we could just snap out of it for a decade or so and realize that the purpose of life is not to fill our garages with toys, but to become something, to do something great, to be evolved, and to be a midwife of sorts as the earth goes through this metamorphosis. Yes, it's a metamorphosis. The earth is going to change. The earth is going to go through the birth canal of the galaxy again. It's going to come out the other side something even grander. And we get to be part of it. We're the envy of the universe because we're here. Now, those of you that are thinking, oh, gee whiz, I don't want to be here. I don't want to commit suicide, but the sooner this life is over, the better. I got to tell you, you're thinking about it all wrong. I just want to correct your course right now. This is heaven. I'm serious. The challenge that you're going through right now, poverty, struggle, pain, disease, whatever, this really is what you designed. Believe me, when you're in spirit form and you can't stub your toe, you can't challenge yourself, there's no contest, it's like playing softball without keeping score. What's the purpose? You don't feel involved. You don't feel challenged. There's no problem with the high jump because you can fly. There's no problem with swimming because you can breathe underwater. There's no problem with getting everything done in a single lifetime because you never die. This is why eternal beings don't get things done on the time scale that mortal beings do, because we're only down here for a few minutes. We got to get it done. We got to get it on. We got to get on with the get on. We got to put things together and make it happen. And we got to do it in a single lifetime, which is only a few moments. Just a few moments. Now, can it be frustrating? You betcha. That's all part of it. But if you overcome it, you overcome the frustration, if you overcome the handicap, if you overcome the challenges, the shortcomings, the scarcity, wow, what a reward. What a reward. But there's another thing to think of here. That's maybe we're going to call it the Zen of motorcycle maintenance. Hold on one moment while I take a sip of Pepsi. By the way, Pepsi, everyone knows, tastes better than Coke. Ah, that's the stuff. I am traveling at just under the speed of sound, traveling west across the panhandle of Florida, heading back for southern Mississippi tonight. It is Mother's Day, so please be grateful for your mom that brought you into the world and for the mom that you're participating with right now, creating life in your own image. It's a great experience. Now, there's more to it, not just accomplishing. Let's talk about the zen of it. You know, I like to ride motorcycles. Those of you that have seen my purple motorcycle out on the highway, you know exactly what I'm talking about and why I enjoy it so much. The screenplay that I just wrote, guess where I wrote it? Yeah, on the motorcycle. Why? Because it's two-wheel meditation to me. I get out there on the road, and the wind is pounding against my face, and it's filling my nostrils and my mouth, and I scarcely have to breathe. I go into a state that's just like floating. No, I don't lose control of the motorcycle. I'm totally aware of where I'm at, and yes, yes, I know it's dangerous. But I also realize I'm invisible on that motorcycle. No one can see me. Don't worry about me so much. But here's the thought to take home from it. When I go out there and I put my helmet on, I straddle the bike, put the kickstand up, put the key in the ignition, turn the key, pull in the clutch, start the motor. As soon as I let that clutch out, I'm already at my destination. Yeah, I know, I'm going someplace, point A to point B, but that's not the point. I could do it by car, but doing it by motorcycle is already the destination. The key is, I'm on the path. Why is it the Zen? Because, like the ancient Buddha said, once you extend your foot, young grasshopper, and put it on the path, you are already at your destination. Why? Because you are what you are, and you're doing something. You're walking the path. So if you set a goal or a dream, as we talked about in the first hour, that you want to be something, I want to be an engineer, I want to be a public speaker, I want to be a writer, I want to be an artist, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a massage therapist. I want to be a gardener. I want to be an architect. I want to be a painter. I want to be a mechanic. Put your foot on the path, and you already are that. Yes, you will gain more experience. You will get better at it. Better than what? Better than you were yesterday. Is it competitive? Yes. Who are you competing with? You. All superlatives aside, you're going to be the best you can be. And you know better than anyone whether you are or are not. If you need more training, get it. If you need more experience, find someone who can give it to you. Become the best you can be, and then you already are the best. Because at the end of the day, you're not comparing yourself against any other human experience but your own. They are having their own human experience. And your two human experiences together make an average experience. All of us, all of our connections, our efforts or non-efforts on this planet create an average experience, an average reality for all of us. The things that you do or they do or you don't do or they don't do also creates that reality. How many realities are there on the earth? About 7 billion of them. Some people are just not conscious, they're conscious. And so their reality is probably one gossip cliche after another. But not yours. Not yours, because you listen to X Squared Radio. You are now empowered to choose another future. You're not going to be handed the future your parents gave you. Uh-uh. You're not going to be handed the future that your teachers saddled you with, or that your coach gave you. No, sir. You're going to choose another future. You're not going to be given that future that's in the scriptures. that says we are marching inexorably down the path to Armageddon. And all you have to do, people, is just watch the news, because we're headed there and there's nothing you can do about it. You really want to know what effect that has? I was having dinner the other night with a very, very experienced, seasoned teacher, a marvelous artist. I mean, a sculptor that I'm in envy. I'm in envy. I could sit at her feet for years and not be as good as she is. Tremendous lady, tremendous experience. She has two granddaughters, one of whom was at the table. And you know what she said? 2012 scares me. I don't know what to do. I mean, is the whole world going to end in 2012? What am I going to do? I'm a young person. I have a whole life in front of me. I don't want to go to college. I don't want to invest money. I don't want to get on any long-term plan at all, because it's all going to end. That's the energy that's out there, people. That's what's being purveyed. That's what your churches and your pastors and your preachers and your prophets have been saying. There's no hope for you, mankind. It's all over. It's all over. There it is in black and white and red. Don't forget the red letters. Because the prophet said it. Because Jesus said the world was going to end. Because John, the mighty John, the beloved, in Revelations wrote that the seven seals are going to be opened, that the stars are going to fall from heaven, that a third of the sea is going to die, and that we're going to have a grand battle in the Valley of Armageddon. And just right at the last minute, the Mount of Olives is going to be split in two, and Jesus is going to come down, and he's going to take up those who are righteous, while the unrighteous burn as stubble on the earth. Oh, come on, people, it's Sunday. All you had to do was turn into any AM radio program today, and you could have heard that sermon. I've just given you exactly what you're going to be hearing. If you don't believe me, I'm sure your cable service has its fair share of televangelists that are saying almost precisely those same words, with the exception, of course, that the listeners to that program are the ones that are going to be taken up in heaven. And you're the ones that are going to be burning because you didn't listen to that program. Can I say nonsense on the air? Yes, of course I can. I can say nonsense. Let me see by a show of hands all those that think that is utter nonsense. Okay, the car next to me, they're raising their hand. Okay, ooh, there was one went by on the other side of the... They were raising their hand. Everybody knows this. But don't tell your pastor, because he'll be out of a job. The point is, we get to choose a new future. Why? Because you already know that one. You've already read that one. And if you don't like it, great. I don't like it either. I choose not to work that path. Just like the Delbert comic in the book, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. There's a very cute comic strip in which a Delbert-like character says, in the future, I can see that I choose the soup and not the salad. So if I choose the salad, does that mean my vision of the future is wrong? Well, the answer is no, it doesn't. It means that you had a vision of the future in which you choose the soup and not the salad, and you're empowered because of that, and now you can make a conscious decision to choose another future and pick the salad instead. So we have a future in which everybody dies, the world burns a stubble, except, of course, for those that were listening to the right TV program. They're taken up into heaven with Jesus, and everyone else is laid to waste. You could choose that future. You can go along with it if you like. Go ahead. Put your money in the pan. Kneel. Stand up. cross yourself, eat a little rice wafer, and say, take me, Jesus. Or, no, all blasphemy aside, all lack of reverence aside, irreverence, you are now an empowered human being with the ability to create a new reality. You can add your new reality to the average reality of the earth. And mathematically, it is absolutely impossible for your input to have no effect. In other words, it must change if you changed. It has no choice but to change, because that's the way the formula was set up, and no god or host of gods can change that. Because the formula is irrefutable. It must work that way. And so all the listeners to this program tonight, all those that read the book, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, can choose for themselves a new future in which you are not handed the future that your parents gave you. You are not handed the scarcity and lack of abundance that has been your inheritance thus far. You can choose anything that you want. You can be anything, and you can do what needs to be done to get there. You have the choice. And if you live in a free country, you can choose these things. And if there are obstacles in your way, you can go around them. You can go under them. You can go through them, over them. You can overcome these things. Maybe not the way that you wanted to do it, but there is a way that you can do it that does resonate with what your dream or your goal or thought is. Joe, welcome back to the program.
If you're not tired of me yet here, I thought maybe you got tired of me and chopped me off last time. I wasn't sure.
No, my cell phone, I was in between cells and it dropped and you were talking by yourself. And then my producer called me back, and by then we were all on a new line altogether. Welcome back.
I should have just kept going, huh? But I'm kind of glad I put this off, because a couple of weeks before this last week, you had some reruns on, and it was kind of somewhat similar topic. I like YouTube because I get to hear from all kinds of people and look at all their inventions and their tests and their science and all kinds of things going on. There's a guy named Randall Carlson. If you type in the search in YouTube, Randall Carlson, the great year, 25920. This is the 25,920 years that it takes for the Earth to make a wobble. What it does is it wobbles as it spins on its axis and it rotates around the sun. It wobbles, and has had this constant wobble so that it actually, that's why the North Star isn't our north. After a while, it changes because the Earth wobbles, and so we're pointing in a different direction, kind of. And it goes through a set of series of cycles, like you were saying, as it goes through this 26,000-year period, just a little shy of that. And it seems to be that each time that there is a change to a new cycle, like what you're saying, that now we go into the age of Aquarius, that when these changes come, you can also look into another one of his lectures. It's Randall Carlson, Fractal Geology Cataclysms. He talks about this is when ice ages happen. That this is when they happen quick, and you'd address things about the Earth going through changes. Now, in Randall Carlson's The Great Year 25,920, he talks about the wheel inside of the wheel, and it's very hard to explain. So I wanted to just get this out to the listeners so that maybe they could look at it and you could look at it. It shows this wheel inside the wheel that may be exactly what Ezekiel was talking about, and that maybe it's easy for prophets, preachers, whatever, I don't know what you want to call them. I don't like religion. If they're a C3 non-profit tax-exempt corporation, they're already part of the beast to me. And there's plenty of, I don't know what we can say, whore-beast combos in this thing, and we've already kind of went through that. You know, I call lawyers paid liars often. I told them in trial last year that they were nothing but trinketry between the whore and the beast, somewhere around the bid area. They don't like me much for saying that. But when you think about these things, it seems to wipe out portions of the population who aren't paying attention to what are going on. And it seems like it has happened over and over and over again to cause the Great Flood and to cause extinctions of these giant archaeological finds of human beings, like you're saying, who are some of them 20 feet tall, have six fingers and six toes. And we know that the Bible talks about a generation from Adam, but it doesn't say anything about before that. All it says was that the earth was created. And whether that was, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is in us. It's in us. I don't like churches. But I read this old black book, and it seems like the more I understand science, the more my faith increases. I get a newsletter from a man named Jonathan Gray. He is an archaeologist. It seems as though they have found Sodom and Gomorrah. And when you look at this place, it looks like fire literally rained down, and it was next to the Dead Sea, to where if someone turned back, they could have got covered with salt and actually turned into a pillar of salt because they find these completely ashed things with unburnt balls of sulfur. And they're all over, like it rained sulfur, burning sulfur down. Now, I don't know how this causes it, maybe from something coming through space that hit the atmosphere and started burning. Now, if you look at several years ago, I think it's called Red Rain. It talks about in India during a monsoon season that it rained red rain, and they looked at it, and in a microscope, these scientists did, and it looked like red blood cells. And they couldn't find any DNA until they did some more intense and higher technology searches of it, and then did find that there was DNA, but it didn't match anything on Earth. And it literally turned the water red, almost as if the blood. So when I look at science, one other example here, Jonathan Gray has sent a newsletter out. It talks about a guy who built a dome. A large dome, and it's an airtight dome, and they pumped carbon dioxide into this dome. And with the carbon dioxide and even oxygen more, pump it so it's intense in there, then it would make a higher air pressure that could actually force oxygen and carbon dioxide into things such as dinosaurs. Oh, no. Am I still on? Okay. So anyways, it could actually create a condition where dinosaurs could live. And giants on the earth, from what it says, what the sons of God came, saw that the daughters of men were fair, and so they came down and chose themselves, chose wives as they chose. And then it says, and in those days there were giants in the earth. It looks like that there's a possibility that beings may be related to us, because they're probably of our universe, or who knows how they got here through what dimensional travel means or however. I don't know. There's all kinds of things that could be, that could make the comings and goings of aliens, whether above the earth, beneath the earth, or on the earth, as it says in Revelations, and that there could even be dragons from some constellation called Draconian, or that we see up in the stars. Every time I look at this stuff and relate it to what I see in this old black book, I see science. To get back at this dome, that when this dome was pumped full of carbon dioxide, They want to tax us for our carbon footprints these days and say, you're making carbon dioxide and that's a global... Well, if we had more carbon dioxide, it might literally make the mist that it talks about that covered the Earth at that time. And when that mist stopped being, then we ended up with a great flood. But without that mist, with that mist that covered the whole Earth, it could literally keep the sun's radiation off of us, and with increased oxygen pushed into our bodies, it could allow us to grow and even live to maybe like Methuselah, 900 years old. Jonathan Gray's newsletter talks about...
I've given some thought about that, too. You know, the Earth, the idea that the Earth is tilted 23 degrees on its axis kind of gives us the seasons that we have now. But if the Earth was, as most of the planets are, aligned perfectly perpendicular with the sun, then we wouldn't have any seasons. And the poles would not be formed. What we would have is a lot more sea because we would not have ice caps as large as we do on either end of the planet. But we'd probably have a temperature equilibrium, which would mean a lot more water in the atmosphere, a lot more cloud layer. And with more cloud layer, with more moisture in the air, there's a lot more molecules in the way to absorb ultraviolet light from the sun, and this might have an effect on the aging gene in our bodies. In other words, the condition of our planet is probably what's responsible for making DNA or making our genes turn on the aging function. If our planet was in a different location, we had different frequencies striking it, or we had a better atmosphere to be able to shield us from this solar radiation, there's a possibility that our genes would turn the aging function off. And instead of living 100 years, we would live 1,000 years or 1,000 years.
Yeah. So sometimes when we wonder, I don't care for these. I hate these guys on TV with their religions and give us money and we'll build this million-dollar church. You know, it talks about the judgments and being swept away by a whirlwind. I noticed I was looking at some news article that talked about this tornado that went through this little village, and I feel sorry for the people. But I thought it was quite interesting what that tornado took out. It took out this great big, like, million-dollar church. It took out the police station. The cop had to run into his own cage to escape the tornado. It took out the dollar store. It took out the pharmacy, the drug pusher's store. I thought, well, how fitting. The judgment just really came on this town, and some people don't want to hear that. And maybe it should be called by a different word, but maybe it's karma. Or maybe it's just the way justice works, and that's a science we don't even comprehend yet, so that maybe if there's a collective consciousness, knowing that we're headed into a new age, and knowing that this is a time when there could be catastrophes, and that if we look out for each other, and we are literally our brother's keeper, instead of suing them, throwing them in a cage, if we looked at everyone as he without sin cast the first stone, as you do it unto the least of these, you have done it unto me. If we look at those things and we want to give at least as much or more than we want to take, then maybe those in that collective consciousness who seek truth and science and knowledge will go through this thing that comes in 2012 or 2017 or who knows when. But it's not too hard to predict Armageddons when you see armies gathering up around this place. And it's not too hard to predict catastrophism when you realize that the Earth has a wobble, and when it goes through one age to the other, it seems to it's time for something to happen. So I hate churches, but when I think of people who are have no spiritual belief, then I worry for them. I believe that I am an alien being, that literally when this dirt house that this spirit is inside of is done and over, that there is a spirit. and that it will transform into a different dimension, and that I don't know whether I will take on another body or what. That would almost be like a resurrection, but I think that it's a matter of transforming who we are, and it all seems spiritual to me, to where I can't separate the temporal from the spiritual anymore because it's so intertwined. One is almost not the same without the other. And
when I look at it, there's a big difference between being spiritual and being religious. And I would be cautious about saying that you hate churches, because some churches do serve a purpose. Lots of people went to church today, and I would say, you know, if you look at church hymns, they're all pretty much in the same range of keys. And when you're singing a church hymn, especially with other people, there's a resonance that goes with it in these keys. And we actually feel good. We have a really good, peaceful, charitable, merciful feeling that comes over it. And that's good. And
I've written my own.
Really, what we're
years.
Doing in a modern sense of the word, what we're doing is we're chanting. We're singing out of a book of chants. And when we sing these words in these tones with these pitches, we create resonant vibrations that excite the chakras, especially the heart chakra. And we feel it. And it makes us rejuvenated. It like washes us each Sunday. And in that respect, going to church every Sunday is good for you, and it's good for your kids.
Until they start into the hell and damnation, and if you don't live this way and that way, then you're no good. And this whole idea of rapture, I don't see that anywhere in the book. You know, I think
well, it isn't in the book. And by the way, if you want to call in and talk about that, I'd be happy to. But you're right. The rapture is not in the book. It's made up centuries later, many centuries later, by modern churches to sort of create an us and them kind of mentality. We're going to be saved and they're going to burn as stubble. So you better make sure that you join us or else. And that's just the way that they have structured the government of their religion. But all that aside, what we're really talking about here is being spiritual and being close to spiritual activities. I think the singing is wonderful. I think the praying is wonderful. I think the social interaction one with another and collectively putting our will out there for forgiveness or for mercy or for love is a wonderful thing. And the pulpits, what is said from there is basically the philosophies of men mingled with Scripture. If they just stuck to the Scripture and did nothing but read that, I think they pretty much couldn't go wrong. But you're going to hear every wind of doctrine from that pulpit, no matter which church you go to. Whether it's a Catholic homily or a good old-fashioned Methodist homily, or whether you're talking about a Mormon talk from a lay minister, whether they're a youth or an adult, you're talking about the philosophies of men mingled with Scripture.
Yes.
That can lead you astray. That can leave you all kinds of confused. Stick with the Word, and you can't go wrong.
Yeah. And so I don't really, you know, I kind of, you know, when we think about the Mayans and how accurate they were about some things, I think they had human sacrifices. So, you know, I wouldn't even want to jump on board with them.
That's the way we interpret it. It actually wasn't the Maya that was doing that. Those were Incas that were doing that. And the human sacrifice, although it's depicted in their artwork, it may be symbolic.
Like Bohemian Grove? Do you know what Bohemian Grove is?
What I understand of the Bohemian Grove is it's a secret meeting of world power to sort of decide a coordinated effort to lead the world in a certain direction. And I don't mean the richest people in the world. I don't mean the richest people in the world at all. I mean the most powerful people in the world, whether they're in politics or banking or oil or drugs, whether they're in stock markets,
movies,
or government,
yeah,
or movies, right? Film.
Well,
oh,
they
man,
have a,
media is a huge way.
They have a ceremony called cremation of care, in which they bring out the effigy of a small child, and they set it on fire in front of a great big stone owl. And it seems like there are a lot of people who, whether we want to believe in spirituality or gods or demons or whatever, it seems as though some do. And they actually do sacrifices, I believe, still, and say that they can run the world and do whatever they want. They can have their wars. They can do their 911s. They can do whatever they want. And they, when you look at the, an aerial view of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., you can see all kinds of things from stars to the owl right at the Capitol grounds, around the Capitol grounds, the way the walkways and streets go. So,
well, you know, that's all by design, and some of this is symbolic, and some of it I don't understand. But to sit there and say that you are going to sell weapons and fuel and influence to two sides of a war just so that you can keep things in conflict, just so that you can keep a flow of weapons and technology, or fund the research into technology, it's got to be wrong. You know, when you see one of these meetings happen, and a few months later, you see the shareholders of Deepwater Horizon not only sell their stock in BP, but also increase the insurance on the rig prior to a fire that occurs, ostensibly because methane blew up, made its way through several different blow-off preventers in order to explode. One has to
wonder.
One has his suspicions. Hey, I'm following the money here. I see something very suspicious, you know. It's not just one person getting a little paranoid and selling 97% of their stock. It's almost all of the Goldman Sachs people. And the strange thing is, almost every single one of these guys that dumped their stock was at that meeting.
Yes, I know that, and it makes you wonder, as far as that goes, about things such as Japan, and I don't know. I had a really dark feeling on December 26th of 2004. I woke up and just felt a dark feeling. Sometimes I think I would rather be on my knees than at a church to catch a sense of things, and I didn't know what went on. I saw something about a tsunami when I kind of looked through the headlines and didn't realize that this was when it had washed up in the Philippines and all over that part of the world. And on CBS News, and maybe someone can find this, because I didn't know how to save an FLV or a flash video at the time. But on CBS News, Dan Rather was on there, and it was like a day or two later, and they said, here are some people who know that part of the ocean well. They've been diving there for years. They know it like the back of their hands. And the guys were on there going, we went down there, and everything was different. Said it looked like a big bomb went off. He says, look, there were jellyfish going around with, it looked like been shot with a shotgun, full of holes. And I just thought, my golly, I wonder if someone has done this. And so I think a lot of it is for control and for power and for money. And I'll let you go after this, unless you're off the air again. But this brings me back to the deal in this old black book I read. It talks about money being the root of all evil, that those who create the money have a way to keep all of the rest of us enslaved to it, so that we don't allow the freedom of free information and knowledge. And colleges are a place where are funded much by proprietary, with receiving proprietary secrets and discovering them, instead of an open place of free knowledge. So schools could be a great place, but when it's all run by this money thing and this beast and those who are willing to do anything to turn natural things that we go through into the earth even uglier, then I just got to say, enough is enough. I'm tired of them. Are you still on?
Yeah, I'm still on. Yeah, and okay. I appreciate your thoughts, Joe. I mean, you know, I kind of, you know, let you go and let you let you express yourself to your fullest, and I appreciate you. I really do. I
could go on and on.
Hear
you
your ideas, and
I've been political science
obviously put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate you, Brooks. Let me say that for all of us. I was listening to Don Nikoloff last week, and he sounded like he didn't know whether anybody's even listening. You guys at BBC are just okay. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you very much. Thanks, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. So you're listening to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We have a little bit different format here. You know, you'll hear a lot of point counterpoint on other programs. The host will be jumping all over the guest and attacking him, making fun of him, and all. You're not going to hear any of that here. We want you to come on. We want you to tell your full thought, your full idea, and I'm listening. Now, I'm open-minded. I'm not going to impose my point of view on you. I may validate some things. I may add some facts and some measurement systems in there for you. But, you know, that's the whole idea. That's why X Squared Radio is what it is. Every number put into the function of X Squared comes out positive, except one. And that's the imaginary number, I, which is the square root of negative one. That, of course, would come out negative. But that's why, you know, the show isn't all about me, even though, you know, I'm the personality that kind of makes it, that drives it. I appreciate the opportunity to have been on the air now for close to 6 years. My greater appreciation is for BBS Radio. It is the number one internet radio network in the world, bar none. Everyone else aspires to do what Don and his brother have done with this radio network. And we're just happy to be part of it. X Squared Radio is, you know, started out in 2005, and here we are in 2011. And I think we're doing a good job because we're right up number one on the BBS Radio Network, the number one network on the internet. And if you do a search for paranormal internet talk radio on Google, we come up number one and have for years. Now, that's powerful stuff. You make it that way, but we also want you to realize that the full thought of the guest is going to be allowed to come out. Am I going to attack them? No. I want them to make their full case right here on the radio so you, the listeners, can make up your own mind as to whether what they're saying resonates with you or does not resonate with you. Now, I'm going to make them tell their whole story. I'm not going to let them hold anything back, and I'm also not going to let them twist in the wind. If they are lacking some piece of technology or some interpretation or they're misinterpreting something, I'm going to help them. And maybe they'll learn something after being on this program. That's why we've had the very best minds in the world on this program, and we're going to continue that. My apologies to those of you that have been trying to listen to the archives for the month of April and also the first week of May, because I haven't added any. And that's because we've been running old programs for the month of April while I worked full-time all weekend long. That's why I'm driving back to southern Mississippi tonight, is because I've been down in Orlando all weekend long working on logistics and wiring for the electric vehicle company, which, by the way, is coming along nicely. You can do your research on that on your own if you want to. But that means that I haven't had time to give you a good quality live broadcast, and we haven't had time to record for the archive. So hang in there. Be patient. There's over 1,000 hours of archive that you can listen to, and if you're all caught up on those and you're looking for current stuff, write me. I'll be happy to write you back. I write every single person back that writes me. It might take me a couple days, but I read them all, and I will answer you back. Be Agnew at x2-radio.com. Be Agnew x2-radio.com. Write me, let me know your feelings, suggest a guest. We've made some changes to the website lately, and that has greatly improved the look and the presence. We're trying to get the functionality of that website back up to where it was so that you can do things like, if you want me to come and speak at your event, you can suggest that. I will let you know right now, I do not charge to speak. I speak for free. I will anywhere in the world, no problem. All I want to do is get the word out. I want to tell the story. I have three lectures that I give. One is on the origin and destiny of the Earth. The other is on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. And the third is on remembering the future, the physics of the soul and time travel. And there's a workshop that goes along with that. I don't charge for it. I'll charge for the workshop because there's a 55-page workbook that goes with it. But I don't charge to speak. So you pay to get me there at home and for my accommodations while I'm there. Give me a table where I can sell movies and books and whatnot, and I'll come to your event and speak. And there's no better deal than that out there. And all you have to do is ask. I'll go anywhere, around the world, anytime. Give me enough notice, and I'll come, and I'll speak at your salon with nine people or at your auditorium. I've spoken at events with as many as 1,400 people at one event. So trust me, it's a good presentation. You get good audio visual. Those of you that have been to the ranch at eSETI can testify to that. If you've heard me at one of the many, many venues around the world that I've spoken, you can testify to it as well. Be happy to come to your venue and speak. The other functionality is the older archives, 2008 and 9, aren't up yet. We're working on it. We want to make it a good quality page for you. It takes some time to do. Have some patience. The other thing is a lot of the affiliates that we had are not listed. Vista Prints isn't listed. Discovery Channel is listed. By the way, I want to let you know this week I am filming with National Geographic. And we're trying to make our minds up whether we're going to do it at the Museum of Natural History or at one of NASA's facilities. But that's coming up this week. So once it's in the can, we'll let you know when it's going to air, and you can go watch it, TiVo it, and we'll certainly have the date out there for you so that you can keep up with that. But that puts us on Discovery Channel, History Channel, 2TV, and now National Geographic. We'll take a quick break. Give us about 4.5 minutes. Get yourself a little drink. We'll be back with the final hour of X Squared Radio. Don't go away.
Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here,
but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Mother's Day to all the mothers of the earth and the earth herself. Be appreciative of the mother that brought your mortal body into this world, and if you are participating with a mother in creating life in your own image, be grateful for that as well. Stare at your children while they're sleeping and watch them grow, because in a few moments, that noisy household with cowboys and Indians, that noisy household with games and arguments and crying and laughing and running and playing, is going to get too quiet. It happens sooner than you know. Participate in that. Your day is coming soon, Dad. So hang in there. This is the day when we celebrate moms. And I appreciate my mom, who passed away many years ago. And I appreciate, more than you know, the mother of our children. Because I have four kids that I've got to create in my own image, and I love and appreciate them. It's amazing how they look like you and act like you, but they are their own individual personalities with their own desires and their own talents. And they may also be star children or children from other areas in the universe that have come here through you to their mortal experience. They may be older than you, so be appreciative of that as well. Don't treat it lightly. There's a lot more to it than the meeting. It's the participation in the human experience that is important. The solar wind is still buffeting the Earth. Where those of you in high latitudes, be aware, there will be auroras this week. Six planets are aligned in the sky. You won't be able to see them with the naked eye. Four of them you can see. Two of them you're going to need a pair of binoculars or a decent small telescope. Uranus and Neptune are up there as well. It's kind of rare that they all get aligned in the sky. No, it's not going to make any more of a gravitational ripple than an extra glass of water on your table. But there is a gravitational experience. There is a gravitational phenomenon that is occurring in our galaxy, which we are getting close to. A few weeks ago, I was down at the LIGO, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. I was meeting with Dr. Thorne. No, not Dr. Kip Thorne. And no, he's not related to Dr. Thorne. But this Dr. Thorne is actually the director of the computer technology for the LIGO in Livingston, Louisiana. And this is a little older facility than the one in Hanford, Washington. The one in Washington is a spectacular facility, almost identical in every respect to the one in Louisiana. When they work together, they're able to tune out the vibrations that occur idiosyncratically. That is to say, a truck driving by or an earth tremor or a crack of lightning or waves smashing against the nearby shore, they get to tune those out because those are unique to the area where that particular instrument is. And once those are tuned out, then the vibrations that are common to both of them clearly do come from space. Now, the idea, of course, two of them operating at the same time is nice, but having three of them operating at the same time really gives us some ability to triangulate on the universe to be able to tell if we're looking at a black hole or coalescing neutron stars or some event like that. The third one is in Australia. The fourth one has not been launched yet, and I believe they're having funding problems with it. And that is LISA, that is the Laser Interferometer Space Antenna. And these are designed purely as research instruments. They are receive only. That is to say, they don't broadcast anything. They use interferometry. Those of you in engineering know what this is. It's a little red laser beam that you can tune against any surface to a null point, that is to a zero point. And then if there's any kind of vibration that infinitesimally changes the distance between the source of the laser and the reflective surface that laser is bouncing off of, then it's going to make a signal. That signal is interfering with the out-of-phase laser light, and that's called interference, and that's why it's called interferometry. This is a very large interferometer. Each leg of this laser framing square, as you will, is 4 kilometers long. Yeah, 4 kilometers between the source and the mirror. And it goes down a tube which has been evacuated of almost all of its air. It takes several weeks to pull all of the air out of this tube. And it's perfectly straight. That laser goes down to the end, bounces off a sapphire, very, very flat mirror that's suspended between very heavy weights, so that it is isolated from the vibration of the Earth around it. And that way, they know if something changes the length of that laser beam, it's probably the very fabric of space-time that has been warped. That can only occur from a gravitational wave coming through our neck of the woods. That's what these observatories do. They give us a view of space that we cannot get any other way. Now, it takes a lot of money to run. The one in Livingston is looking for $100 million right now to operate it for 1 year. So you can see that it's quite expensive to maintain because the technology is so high. The computer technology that does the timing for this is absolute state-of-the-art. We're talking multiple server frames, all coordinated with a high-speed switcher that's as good as or better than that one used for stock trading. That's the controller that coordinates all of these CPUs, which, by the way, are not dual-core. They're triple-core CPUs. So they're running incredible amounts of RAM, way up in the terabyte range, and that they're able to process a tremendous amount of information at one time simultaneously in these control rooms. The idea is to get all of them operating at the same time. This takes a lot of money. The reason that it's important is because maybe, just maybe, people that designed this had a purpose. See if they could find, directly detect a black hole in space. Why is that important? That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it. In Roman times, ancient Roman times, there was an observation in the summer triangle of space. Summer triangle is that triangle between Deneb, Sirius, and a third star, escapes me right at the moment. By the way, if you know which one is the third star in the summer triangle that makes the third apex, you can call in at X Squared Radio right now. All phones are live. I'll think of something. If you call in and you know what the third star is, I know what it is. Deneb, Sirius, and a third star that makes up the summer triangle in the starry sky. I'll think of something to send you. It'll be a good prize. Call in any of the lines at X Squared Radio. Yes, you could go to Google and look up, and some of you probably already are. But still, you'd be smart enough to look it up, and we'll give you the prize anyway. Anyway, in ancient Roman times, it used to be that you could look in that area with the naked eye, and you would see a red glow. Well, the red glow is from the red giant of one of the failing stars in that summer triangle. Now, the strange thing is that if that were the case, and we have to assume that it is because obviously they didn't have a lot of light pollution back then. They had a great view of the sky. They could look at it night after night. It didn't take much of a rocket scientist, as if there were any back then, to record this for posterity. Posterity read it. We looked at it. We analyzed it. We said it can only be caused from a red giant. A red giant is a dying star in that area. But if it was a case, a mere 2,000 years is not long enough for that red star to completely dissipate. Not so. We should still be able to see it today. 2,000 years is a cosmic millisecond. We should still be able to see the red glow of that dead star. And we can't. It's all gone. So it leads us to believe that there might be a black hole in the summer triangle. And it absorbed, it pulled off and swallowed all of the gases off of this dying star. Yes, it's possible that there is a proto-black hole. That is to say, a coalescing neutron star that has gone super dense. It has gone past the brown dwarf stage where we don't really see the light, still heavily gravitational, and it could have pulled the gas off. But more than likely, in order to pull that much matter in that short amount of time, it had to be a black hole. We are worried that if there's a black hole in our neighborhood, as close as Deneb to Earth. Maybe there are others. And maybe it will be important to directly detect those. This is why the LIGOs were built. No, the technology is just now getting to the point where we're able to detect 10 to the minus 23rd centimeters, 10 to the minus 23rd centimeters. This means on the order of the atomic level, that is to say, somewhere in the sub-angstrom level of detection. This is the sensitivity of these instruments. That's why it's so important to have all three of them operating at the same time, because, believe me, a horse galloping by, a semi-truck driving by, a sonic boom, a boom of lightning, a heavy wave crashing against the shore, air conditioner running in the building, any of those kinds of vibrations will show up in this interferometer. But if it shows up at one and not the other two, then we know it's a local event. If it shows up at all three, we know it is a galactic event, and we want to measure it. But so far, not enough funding has been put into the program, and we're worried because 2012 is upon us, and it looks like it's going to be early 2012 before we get a simultaneous run with these three observatories. And we know that LISA has been underfunded and is way behind schedule and likely will not make the mix as far as being able to detect in time anything that's going to happen in 2012. Now, let's add to that this anomaly, which one of my colleagues, Michio Kaku, who is now a commentator on Fox News, he is a contributing celebrity physicist to many organizations, and so he hasn't been on this program. We have communicated back and forth from time to time, but recently he made a public statement, and I mean very recently, like last month, made the announcement that there is a body that's headed toward Earth, not exactly on a collision course, but in our general neighborhood. We thought it was a comet. It's now getting closer. We see that even though it's sort of off-gassing, the head of this body seems much more corporeal than a comet. We thought it was a meteor for a while, but it's off-gassing like a comet. We've taken some long-distance photographs, a very few of these, and now the astrophysics community is confused. In fact, according to my colleagues, they don't know what to make of it. They really have to rewrite some books on this one. And it is approaching. And we have no instrumentation that I know of, that Michio knows of, to be able to give us answers that we need. Hopefully, we'll keep tabs on it. We'll see what's going on. But the idea is that we're blind. We don't know what's going on out there. We can't measure it. The only observatories that we have don't have enough funding to take a nice, hard, coordinated look at it. We do have a caller on the line that has the answer to the third star in the summer triangle. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. That star you're looking for is Vega.
Vega!
Altair, Deneb, and Vega.
We have a winner. We have a winner. That's right. Vega. And
yeah, and
Vega.
And Brooks, have you read anything by Walter Cruttenden?
Yes,
He has a book out there called The Lost Star of Space and Time.
Yeah.
He has researched fairly heavily into the Great Year and the Yugas and the precession of the equinox. And he takes a slightly different twist on it than simply the wobble of the Earth. He looks at I don't have the book finished yet, but he talks about a binary star system. You know that our sun has a brown dwarf sister, and the two of the stars, the sun and that brown dwarf, are kind of rotating around each other, and as our sun rotates around that brown dwarf in a very, very long, elongated ellipse. Our solar system gets, of course, dragged along as a companion with its sun. Therefore, you know, we move through different vibrations in the galaxy. And he says, as we get closer to that brown dwarf, or closer to the second sun, the vibrational level of the planet raises. People are more enlightened. The ages become more enlightened. And he uses a lot of the research done by Sri Yukteswar, the Vedic scholar from India, who passed away back in about 1935, who was Yogananda's guru. So it's just a little bit different approach than simply the wobble of the planet. He talks about the entire solar system moving through different districts in the galaxy, and as we grow closer to that second sun, then we get closer to our golden ages.
Right. Yeah, we had Walter on the program last year, and we covered his book, The Lost Star.
Oh, very good, very good. I missed that episode, but I sure picked up on Cruttendon. I think his work is astounding. Yours too, by the way.
Yeah, we do too. We do too. And the thing that lends credence to Walter's theory is that the pyramids were painstakingly aligned to the star Sirius 11,000 years ago. And they're still aligned.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Means even though we've moved halfway through the precession, we're still aligned with that star, which means that our sun and that brown dwarf, which is very close to the star Sirius, are revolving around each other.
Right.
And that's what lends great credence to his idea. And I like the way he brings the yugas in there. The yugas are these bronze, gold, iron, and I think...
silver.
I can't remember. Silver, that's
right.
And
the silver, yeah.
Different ages, and those different ages are different lengths. I question as to whether we're getting close to the Golden Age, whether we're coming out of the Iron Age and going into the Bronze Age. I don't really know. I'm kind of a scientist, and I have a tendency to be skeptical on things like that. But the idea that we're coming out of a very warlike period, there could be no question. My goodness, we've had a war going for 2,000 years on this planet.
Oh, enough, isn't it?
Somewhere.
I've had enough. I did 20 years in the Army, and my goodness, I've had enough. All these contrived wars that go on to fatten the wallets of God knows who, you know, all the fat cats that are sitting up there in levels above reality. I certainly have had enough, and I've had a beautiful day, by the way. I had a wonderful Mother's Day. I love my mother very much, and I spent a great day with my wife and stepson. We attended some vegetarian cooking class today, and we ate the product, and we've just had a beautiful day, and I appreciate you, and I'm going to go ahead and let you go now, and keep up the good work, and I can't wait for your movie to come out. Goodbye now.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you. Well, by the way, I want to let you know that the producer has said that although we have written, or I've written the screenplay for a major motion picture, and let me tell you, people, the movie's good. You know, I'm no movie writer, but I'm a really good movie critic. I really am. I can analyze a movie from a director's point of view, from the camera shots, from the lines, from the actors, from the editing. I'm a good critic, and I've criticized this screenplay every angle that you can think of. And I told you, I wrote it while I was riding my motorcycle. Just every time I get out, another scene comes to me, and I bounce it off my friends, and we work it through, and then I write it. It is a good movie. Now, what we got to do is we got to find a star and a director. Before we do that, we have to have a contract. And we have to have the options outlined, and that takes an entertainment attorney. Now, I wasn't prepared for an entertainment attorney. You know what I'm doing with my day job. I'm trying to launch an electric car company, and I'm not going to say any more about any details there. But this is my night job of being a talk radio host and writing books and things like that. And it certainly helped put my kids through college and all that, and I appreciate it. But we don't have it in the budget for an entertainment attorney. It's going to take about $10,000. So I have launched a campaign on a special website that's called YouFundMe. And one of my friends, James Gilliland, as you know, he has the ranch up in Trout Lake, Washington. And he had the problem with some local codes people trying to make it difficult on the properties that James has so painstakingly built over the last couple of decades up there so that we could have a fine experience in going up there and speaking and listening to great speakers and looking at the stars and having a wonderful spiritual experience a couple times a year. The locals love it. The town loves it. The people love the commerce. They love the people that come in. They're all peace-loving. They're all sober, diligent, wonderful members of the community, and they bring lots of money into the town. But there are some people down at City Hall that are doing their darndest to try to make it impossible for James to do what he does. So he defended himself and defended the property for a couple of years, and now it's escalated to the point where they're enforcing some very strange opinions on building codes and things like that, which, of course, James has met all those. But now it's come time for James to have to get an attorney to defend the ranch and be able to make sure that the edifices and structures and everything can stay there and James can continue to offer his sanctuary to those who want to come and see UFOs, talk about UFOs, and become part of the galactic community. That lawyer was expensive, about $18,000, also not in the budget. So he went to YouFundMe, put a campaign out there, and they had the money for the attorney in just a couple of weeks. So I've done the same thing with the movie, which is going to be based upon the book Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. No, I'm not going to tell you the name. It's not important right now. That's not what they do in Hollywood. But I am going to tell you that we need that entertainment attorney. We got to get those contracts in place. We got to get the options in place so that I get paid when the movie is made, and then my position is insured. Otherwise, I won't be. You'll still get a great movie, but I won't get paid for it. Not really acceptable when it comes to paying for my kids' college education. So I've put it out there, so if you get an email from me or you know that that's out there, you can do a search for it by going to YouFundMe.com, and you can do a search for entertainment attorney needed. And you'll find that the area that you can donate. You can donate a dollar or $2 or $5 or whatever you want. Many hands make light work. Let's see if we can get that money in place so we can get that entertainment attorney paid for and we can become part of the motion picture world. We want to make sure that this movie gets made because it's true. And it will put the spiritual information in place so that the people that see this movie can participate in the phenomenon of 2012 without a lot of panic and fear. They can participate in it with a message of hope, a message of participation, a message of creation. That's what we want to put in here. No, it's not a religious movie. It's an awesome action movie. There's a chase going on all through this movie. There's tons of conflict, and it's going to be fun. If you like 2012, you like The Day After Tomorrow, well, this movie's nothing like those. You're really going to enjoy the movie. Help us out if you can. If you can't, at least go and buy the ticket when it comes out. Enough said on that. I do want to talk a little bit about finish up talking about this observation of the galaxy and the reason it's so important and the reason that these multi-hundred million dollar, billion dollar facilities have been built. It's because not so much NASA. This was originally designed by a team named Michelson and Morley. Michelson and Morley decided to create an interferometer to measure the speed of light and test Einstein's theory that the speed of light was finite in the universe. There was a theory out there that the ether of the universe dragged light down. They knew that the Earth was traveling around the sun at the rate of about 18.5 miles per second. That speed going through space, theoretically, had a subtractive effect on the speed of light. In other words, 186,000 miles per second was the speed of light. Shooting laterally from the Earth with this interferometer should have shown that light was traveling 186,000 miles per second less 18.5 miles per second. Well, guess what? It didn't. So the theory that ether and the speed with which you travel through the ether of space affects the speed of light was disproven. Now, the theory was sound, the experiment was sound, but it's a possibility that the interferometer was too small, that it wasn't implemented correctly. And so a very, very smart man, a teammate and colleague of Stephen Hawking, his name is Dr. Kip Thorne. You may know the name if you ever read the monster book that became a national bestseller, even though it was a pure physics book. It was called Black Holes and Time Warps. This was a book put out by Dr. Kip Thorne. It was about 600 pages, about 2 inches thick. If you could read that book, well, you deserve to be a member emeritus of X Squared Radio. Excellent book, super well thought through, and highly risky for Dr. Kip Thorne because he was a mainstream physicist, well respected in multiple universities, a colleague, absolute friend and colleague of Stephen Hawking. By all accounts, the smartest, most recognizable physicist of all time, at least recent times. So this was a professional risk for him to put out this book, but he did. Kip Thorne is the man that led the team that convinced the government to build these large interferometers. And the dream was to build multiple units around the world so that we could have some parallax with which to view the galaxy. Now, for the government, the U.S. government, the Australian government, to build these units at a huge cost with a very future look, these things wouldn't be operational for 10, 12 years. Now they're getting sensitive enough. That is to say, they're controlling the laser frequency tight enough. They've isolated all the causes of special vibrations. So now they've got a process that is reliable, repeatable, and sensitive enough to make these measurements. They're almost ready to go live with them simultaneously so that we can look at the galaxy. The big question is, why? Why? We're not measuring the speed of light anymore. It's because we're looking for those black holes that might be in our neighborhood. Because maybe the Maya were right. Maybe they knew that the Earth was getting ready to go through this phenomenon. Maybe they knew that the red that was once visible in the summer triangle between Vega, Deneb, and Sirius was a dying star, and that all of the gases from that dying star have been absorbed and pulled into a singularity by a black hole, which means somewhere in our neighborhood there might be a black hole, and it would be a good idea to know where it is. That's why all this money was spent. That's why it's so important that these observatories get funded so that they can get up and get running so we can have some knowledge about our neighborhood. We have a caller on the line. Welcome to X Squared Radio. How are you? Hello, caller. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Ah, now I can hear you.
Are you, Brooks, are you, do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, I can't tell if, I don't know if it's my phone or our connection. It just doesn't sound like I can hear you very well. But as long as you can hear me, that's great. I really enjoy your show, Brooke.
Wow, that means so much to me. I'm doing 80 miles an hour along the freeway tonight, which is probably why we have a poor connection.
That might be it. Yes, well, the LISA observatories, 100 million?
It's 100 million to operate it for 1 year, according to Dr. Thorne. Why?
I
have no idea, but that's the funding they're looking for.
Well, with all the bailout money to, like, AIG and them, that's, I mean, just a few bonuses would add up to that. You know, from,
yeah,
why
I agree
not
with
just
that.
That's chunk change to those people. Why not just have them give that back into the system?
Well, it's a matter of leadership. You know, Obama has a different idea. $3.3 trillion of those funds that came back from the banks after it was paid back would have been more than enough to make a huge dent in the debt. Which, by the way, Congress wanted them to do. But what did they do with it? They gave the money away to the credit industry. And one of the big takers of it was none other than General Electric.
Oh, yeah.
And the following month, after GE gets all these billions and billions of dollars, interest-free, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
The CEO of GE was appointed by Obama to lead the economic recovery.
Okay. That's why I quit listening to the politics. Oh, God. It's amazing. And, you know, GE is the largest media ownership.
I didn't know that.
If you go to stopbigmedia.com, you will find that if there's a section that says, who owns the media? And if you press that button, the number one ownership for media is GE. And when you press that button, you can see all the way down to your local newspaper, all the magazines, all the foreign channels, all the radio channels, all the newspapers, all the, you know, everything. And they're also one of the biggest government contractors. And
One of the biggest contractors. You betcha. I guess the question to ask is, what isn't going on at General Electric?
Exactly. When you said all of the nuclear plants are owned by them, all of them?
They're not owned by them, but they were all built by them. In the last 20 years, GE has been the one building all the plants.
I see. Well, that design is not by mistake, Brooks, not in my opinion.
I don't think so either. So GE posted $9 billion in profits first quarter 2011.
Oh, my God. There's, you know, you hear the saying, follow the money. It's true. It's sad.
It is.
I don't think that as a community of human souls that we really care that much about money until our ability to exist is threatened because that concept of money is there.
Well, I think it's largely a function of apathy, though. You know, we the people, and we know what's going on, but we don't really care. And the people that want Obama in office, in all of his ineptitude, want him there because he signs off on the transfer of this economic power into these few global corporations.
Oh, yeah. And I think some of them are beyond global. Sometimes I wonder who's really in charge, Brooke. But,
well, you have to see the movie if you want to know who's really in charge.
I think I already have a good suspicion. I don't know if you ever heard of Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com.
No, I have.
You haven't heard of Cliff High, really?
I really haven't.
Oh, all right. Well, he's he's put together an interpretive thing with the internet where he puts out little spiders, he calls them, so that they pick up conversation. His theory is that we are all psychic, and it comes out in our language. And he was, I don't know what company he was working for, but he's got incredible computer knowledge, and he's got the ability to see patterns for programs. I don't know if I'm doing a justice for what he does, but he comes up with this this predictive way. Gosh, I'm not doing him justice. His ALTA reports. Gosh, he's a linguist, and he
Okay. Now his name is Cliff High, like
Cliff High. Yeah, H-I-G-H. And he has he has predicted a lot of things that have come to pass, and he's got different categories for different things. Like Earth would be the Terra entity, and the cowards that be, as I call them, because they are cowards. If you got to bully people like that, you're a coward. So, and he's put a lot of stuff out there that has come to pass. You know, like some other people too, you know, but that can see patterns and things forming. And you know, he's been really good. But one thing, the only reason I mention him right now is because he was talking about the concept of money, and he said if or when, you know, everything goes to hell in a handbasket, flat broke, like it's, I mean, the whole economic system is going to, it's going to end. You know, you can't maintain this kind of, it can't be maintained. And he says what's sad is that when it ends, we will still have the capability of going to Mars. We would still have the capability of manufacturing and sustaining ourselves very well, even better than right now. But the reason everything will stop, like, a wrench in the cogwheel, will be because of this perception we call money. And I thought it was such an excellent point that he made, because it's, if you think of money, we can do things without money in the way that it's done now if we just could all get together. I don't know. I think some terrible things are going to have to happen before we all get together.
Well, money is effective in the sense that it is it's a contract to pay. It allows me to do work in, say, southern Mississippi. I can convert that money into a contract to pay that I can then take to Florida, and I can exchange that contract to pay for goods in Florida, and I can do stuff with it. So it's effective in that sense.
Where it gets corrupted is when the value
of that money is determined by a body that doesn't have a dog in the fight. That is to say, we've got a Federal Reserve that creates money out of nothing, that creates money out of no value.
Yep.
And of course, it's like being the banker in the game of Monopoly. When all the players are looking at the commercial or at the touchdown pass on TV, you slide a couple of 500s into your bank account so that you can buy more real estate, more apartments, and thus charge more rent and blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
So the banker always wins in Monopoly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it's like. The Federal Reserve is the banker in Monopoly. And nobody is watching the bank. It's never been audited.
Congress isn't. They got their hands in it, too.
No, Congress is not watching it. I sat down with Dennis Kucinich face-to-face October of last year, and I asked him about it.
Well, he's been kicked out of the private stuff because he's for the people. That's my understanding of it. He's not invited to.
He told me, Brooks, we passed legislation. We try to stay on top of it. But the banks are too fast for us. They always stay one step ahead of us. And I said, Congressman, here's the problem. The banks are not meeting the credit needs of the community. What we see out here as manufacturers is the banks are no longer funding inventory. If we don't fund inventory, we can't afford to buy the materials to fill the orders that we already have. We've got to go find investors. We've got to go find private sources of funds or put the company itself at risk in order to put the parts in place in order to fill the orders that we already have that are paid for.
Yeah.
The banks are supposed to do that, but they're not doing it because you're not making them do it.
Right.
The banks are simply buying and selling prime money, which is created fictitiously by the Federal Reserve.
It is. And our income tax, which is unconstitutional, is what pays the interest on that debt. Oh, my God.
Yeah, who gets the interest?
Huh?
Who gets the interest?
Well, those big families with big names.
There you go. It's the banks that make the interest. Now, the interest is not the principal. In other words, we're not paying down the debt.
No, we're not.
The banks are making billions, trillions of dollars in interest off of money they didn't even have.
That's right. And I think it was Henry Ford that said in that documentary by Aaron Russo, America, Freedom to Fascism, Henry Ford was quoted as saying something like along the lines of, if the American people knew how the banking system really worked, there would be a revolution before dawn.
Well, that's true. And Jefferson went even further than that and said in his response to and his creation of the Federalist Papers that it was the banks that would destroy the country. Remember, Hamilton tried to get a national bank formed, just like they had in Europe, a national bank. Well, we've got all kinds of laws preventing a national bank. That's why the Federal Reserve is not federal, and, of course, they have nothing in reserve.
Yeah,
for a long time, for a couple hundred years, banks could not form multi-state organizations. You had state banks. You had large conglomerations of state banks, but you had no national banks. Now you got Bank of America, you got Chase, you got Wells Fargo, you got Wachovia, you got Fifth Third Bank. They exist in dozens of states.
Yeah.
So we're very close to having this national bank presence. What they do is they come in and they buy up the local banks, even if the local bank's got 50 branches in a state. They'll buy that bank, which, by the way, the shareholders are very grateful for because they get to put several hundred million dollars in their pocket at that moment. But they absorb all the assets of that bank. That means all the deposits, all the mortgage-backed securities, everything. And they liquidate it. Or they leverage it many times over with the Federal Reserve to create prime funds that they can make money on the interest and the service release of those premiums. And that's how the whole banking system works. It's corrupt.
It's beyond corrupt. It's beyond corrupt. I don't know. I thought of, making DVDs and stuff and giving it to people to just see the basics. So many people don't even know what the Federal Reserve is. And they think FDIC is going
to
insure their money. FDIC is a private corporation. And the last I read, the FDIC only has about as much money as to cover 9,000 accounts of the first three largest banks. After that, that's it.
Well, if you read the small print in the FDIC, your account is insured up to $100,000.
Yeah, but that account belongs to the bank.
You read the fine print, they only have to return the principal, and they can take up to 10 years to do it.
The bank and not the person putting their money in there.
Right.
I called my local bank and said, what happens? Because I told them I knew that. And I said, and so what happens if there's a run on banks and then you guys don't have any money? I said, do you get what's in my account? And because the bank officially owns that account? And if so, when do I get it? And the lady, she was kind of shocked, and she said, well, that's our decision to when you would get it.
Right.
She honestly said that to me.
I don't know. I don't advise a run on the bank. I advise
no.
a very slow, very methodical move to get your cash out of the bank, get it in something hard like gold
yeah.
that you own, the metal, or cash. But I've already said on this program, and I've written in books, what will happen when this collapses or gets close to collapse or goes to unified. They're going to ask you to turn all your cash in at the bank, and they're going to give you a finite period of time, like 90 days. If you don't turn your cash in at the bank, your cash is going to become worthless. If you want credit for it, you've got to go deposit your cash in the bank. Once all the cash is in the bank, then cash will be eliminated, and everything will go to electronic money.
Well, I did hear a lady on the radio say that her father went through the Depression, and he told his daughter, never, ever put your money in a bank. And she called up some show, and she was getting a Social Security check, and she said, I got a letter with my last Social Security check stating that if I didn't have a bank account by 2013, I would no longer receive my Social Security.
That's correct. It would have to be direct deposited into a bank account.
So then, Brooks, if people have precious metals, how is the value from that precious metal going to be applied if everything's digit dollars?
Ah, but there's a separation. You use the word value.
Yes.
And the value of gold never changes. Gold can be exchanged directly for land, for vehicles, for whatever it is you need. You don't need dollars if you've got
okay.
gold. It's the value of the dollar that changes, not the gold.
Okay, but what about the small print that says citizens are not allowed to own precious metals nor land? You can hold title. You can hold a certificate of title to your property, but you can't own the title itself. So where do you go
then?
Well,
I understand that. You know, gold was illegal to own for a while by presidential executive order. That was lifted about 30 years ago. You're able to own gold again. And for me, I would rather own the hard metal itself. Small coins, small, you know, well-minted 99.9% pure gold.
Or
but
silver?
Or silver, and I would not hold my money in the bank. Or precious gems. And I would love to talk more, but it's four minutes to 10 my time, Central Time, which means we are out of time.
Brooks, I love you. I'm so glad you're on. Just a question still that you can maybe think of till next week. Why on earth would they have blown up levees to further flood something worse that's already flooded?
Well, I don't know. To make history, I guess.
To set off the new Madrid. Brooks, bless your heart. I'm really
interesting.
Yes, they blew up levees and at night. I don't understand why would you blow up levees at night, and then it flooded all this farmland in Missouri and you know Tennessee, and it's just very sad what's happening.
Well, it'll be nice and fertile for the next 20 years.
I don't know. I think it's going to be nice and muddy. But bless your heart.
Well,
I'm so glad you're on, Brooks.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for the call. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, that's it for X Squared Radio on Mother's Day 2011. We will see you next week on X Squared Radio. We're live 5 to 8 Pacific time, 8 to 11 Eastern time. We love your calls. We love your presence. We'll be back with X Squared Radio next week. Peace and joy, my friends. Good night.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, peace, Earth Explorers.